if I could, I'm asking questions for those, I could ask you later, but for not everybody does, but a few years back, there was a chap down south, a Presbyterian guy, an evangelical Bible teacher, and he propagated in the denominational magazine this view that we needed to settle in and realize that actually small churches were the norm. How do we counteract that view?
I think it would be hard to sustain that in view of the book of Acts. I'm not sure what biblical proof he gave for that assertion, but at least in the book of Acts, there's a constant refrain of the numbers of people that were coming to the Lord. And the Lord was adding daily to the church those who were being saved. 3,000 at Pentecost and again, thousands at another time and many priests becoming obedient to the faith. I find it difficult to believe that there would be some people have talked about the remnant theology. Maybe the brethren use that term a lot to try to, but the remnant theology really relates to Israel situation in the Old Testament. To bring it into the New Testament would be hermeneutically a bit difficult. But certainly there are small churches, and we praise God that it's not numbers that he's impressed by. How could God be impressed by numbers? But we've seen also by church history, in church history, that God has been pleased to build great and big churches, and when the wind blows, we get churches that are overflowing, don't we? Whether it's a Metropolitan Tabernacle or Westminster Chapel, or people come into the churches, and you've had that in the history of the church here in Ireland.
What's the intriguing thing in Acts is that we read then about them meeting from house to house, no way in which 3,000 could met in one house. It seemed that while there was a great ingathering, some indication that while they met in the temple, but then there was, as it were, the smaller context.
Yeah, I would say, you know, my own view of this is when a church reaches about 250 people, it's better to start a new work, if that's what you mean. I took the question a bit of a different way. I think Spurgeon's church suffered because of its size. When he left, things fell apart a little bit. It's hard to manage that many people unless, I don't know how it could be done unless you have a really super structure of elders and small groups. But we've always said in our sending church in Atlanta that when a church gets to be about 250, 300 people, it'd be better to just divide it up and go on for a new work. But I was taking that in the sense that some people just want to settle for churches of 30 or 40 people and think that's normal. And I don't think that's necessarily honoring to the Lord to have that. That can sometimes be a pretext for just settling down into the status quo. But I would agree that in general, probably Reformed people are not into these huge mega churches. We think it's a mistake.
I suppose one of the big ideologies and beliefs sweeping Europe and the world today is moving so many people, and so many people are now being committed to, is in fact concern for saving the planet. I'm wondering if that's where people are increasingly at, and how in terms of evangelistically they might begin where people are at.
Well, you know, we're concerned for saving the planet,
yes.
Concerned for saving ourselves.
Yes.
the thing that's been talked about all the time.
Right.
I'm not sure how to how just where tentacles from there to well, you need to save yourself.
Yes, yes. I think it's a wonderful topic that we can use. Francis Schaeffer wrote a book on the issue of pollution and the Christian. I don't remember the exact title. Does anyone remember it? Something like that, Pollution and the Death of Man. It might be interesting to look at that in light of where we've come to today, because it's even much more issue. But I think it's always good to start with what's true in the thought of the people and show them, as Lloyd Jones used to do so well, then move them on and show them where it's twisted and where it...
Rather than say that's an unimportant.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And Christians should, for a different reason, be very concerned about the planet Earth, which is God's creation, and we're stewards of it, and to just wreck it for no reason. I think we all have some thinking to do, but at the same time, we know that this Earth is destined for destruction, and so we don't make an idol of it, which is what's happening. People are making Mother Earth to be their god, and the one great aim should be to save Mother Earth, and we can show people what a slavery this is and what a foolishness, and why we have a better hope than they do, because this hope depends on mankind's being willing to now be serious, which will never happen anyway. And we've got a better hope that the God who loves the earth, loves all the creation, he'll make a new earth that can't be polluted, because he's going to change men's hearts. And the pollution of the earth comes from the pollution of our hearts. So there are wonderful topics like this that we can really use, but I have a French friend who's a communist and very strong atheist, and we've had he and his wife over for dinner, and they've had us a number of times, and we've gotten into some very lively conversations. But he came over to the house one day, and he saw that I had a water recuperator that takes the water from my roof so that I water the grass without wasting water. And this was a great thing to him. It really meant something to him that I would have this, and he began to ask me all sorts of questions. And then I discovered this was the area that he worked in. His job is in the area of ecological, helping big projects. And I realized that I gained a notch of respect for the Christian faith, because if he had seen me as one of these guys who only cared about heaven, so excuse me for saying it this way, but to hell with earth, then he would have no time for my message, and probably rightly so in a way. But it's just interesting how you can meet people without